Apple ships a boatload of Macs. Tiger's on its way out. Leopard's on its way in. Hey, it's My Mac Podcast 150.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And welcome to another edition of the MyMac.com podcast. This is, like I said at the beginning of the show, the 150th. Actually, that's probably not really correct because we have had the mini podcasts and I didn't add those into the total. So we've actually produced more than 150 podcasts, but this is the 150th consecutive weekly podcast that we've done since starting at the very end of 2004. Chad Perry and Guy Searle isn't with me this week, but I have Rich Lefko and Donnie Yankolo. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's Rich. Rich, you were a contest winner. That was the first time you were ever on the show.
That's right. I entered a contest for the had a Microsoft package with it came with the keyboard and mouse and three license box of Microsoft Office.
Which was a heck of a prize, really. I mean, That was worth a lot of money.
It was worth like $500 or something like that. Yeah. I was amazed. I'd never won anything in my life.
That was the first time.
Yeah.
And I put you on the show. Didn't I record you ahead of time?
No, you called and I wasn't here. One of the rare times I wasn't here. And I called you afterwards and we just had a conversation for about, I don't know, seemed like an hour. But I never got on the show because you'd already edited the podcast.
Oh, I had thought that you were actually on the show. We've had a lot of winners, obviously, and then after a while they're hard to keep track of. But
no.
I don't know. I thought you were actually on the show at one time. I remember, though, we had talked for a long time. And your knowledge of Macs and your personality and all that, I thought, man, he would make a good Mac writer. And here you are.
No. If I had been on the show, it would have been memorable. No, if I had been on the show, no. Actually, you said to me, we talked about writing, and I had said that I would like to do some writing around the Mac, something I've always wanted to do, and you invited me to send something, and I did, and I've been a slave ever since.
What I learned the day my hard drive died was your first article posted January 3rd, right before Macworld.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hasn't even been a year yet. So what do you think about writing on the Macintosh, writing about the Macintosh? Is it as boring as it sounds, or is it actually kind of fun?
No, I've enjoyed it. This gives me an opportunity to publicly thank John Nemo for his mentoring and support, for helping me understand, so much about writing that never even struck me before. I always thought, hey, you just start typing it up and you go for it. But there's so much more to it.
John Nemo does a lot behind the scenes at MyMac.com that the average visitor of the website would have no idea. He's awesome.
Absolutely. He's been a tremendous mentor helping me hone my skill. I've enjoyed writing the reviews quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to writing some, you know, just some other stuff, just some kind of free flow stuff, you know, down the road.
But, anything surprising to you about writing? You do a lot of reviews, obviously, but you've done a few. Actually, I think you've done one kind of a free flow article. Anything surprising to you?
Surprising. Well, let's see.
About product review, I mean, is there anything about it
that
you weren't anticipating?
Yeah, I'm surprised about how many products there are. It's you know, with the spreadsheet that we use to keep track of all of the things that we review, I'm amazed at the number of things that come up for review.
There's a lot of products out there.
And you know, you sit around and used to hear all the time that the Mac doesn't have software or it doesn't have hardware. Well, yeah, you know, take a look at the spreadsheet sometime.
It's amazing when you think about how many books are written about products that Apple sells, not to mention the operating system books themselves. and what the Apple universe now encompasses, not just computers anymore, but iPods, iPhones. It's a huge market.
Exactly, and all the accessories that go along with that. I mean, look at what you just did with that that case, that little mini review you did, the video.
Yeah, anybody listening to this on either Friday morning or over the weekend or even Monday, you go up to mymac.com, and right before the show is posted, there's a video review I did, and you know, those are kind of fun to do, but they're also very difficult in that I'm standing by myself in front of a camera. The tripod I'm using is actually shorter than I am. So I got to kind of try to get the exact angle. And I never really know where to film it. I always have these ideas, well, I'll go over here or go outside. And I just pick a corner and just shoot it right there. That's actually in the dining room.
But we need to make you a backdrop.
That's right. I thought about doing green screen and then overlaying some video behind it to make it look more, I don't know, professional, but I'm just too lazy.
You can put yourself,
and I just don't have the room.
With the new iChat, you can put yourself anywhere.
Well, that's true. And that's one of the things that I had sent a staff email, and I asked, we'll start with Donnie, what your opinion is. I was thinking of doing something where two people are chatting, and instead of seeing the people, you would actually see at least one person's desktop. That person would be basically reviewing the program but talking to the other staff member about the program. It's a little bit different than just writing a static text review, and it's also different than doing a product review in video form because you can't really do software video reviews. I mean, a talking head talking about software doesn't work.
Right.
But holding up an iPhone case, that does work. Do you think that's something that people would be interested in, or even you would be interested in participating in?
I think it'd be a cool thing if it would work, if we could get it to work right and get all the bugs out of it. I think it'd be pretty cool, and then you have not only the reviewer's reaction, but the person the reviewer is showing the product to's reaction, kind of like...
Yeah, it's more of a discussion. I mean, it's a product review, but it's a discussion.
And you get the instantaneous reaction from the person that's actually seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, that was kind of my idea. What do you think, Rich?
Well, I think it's a cool idea. I think the downside of it is, you know, we only have so much time to actually play with a piece of software. So getting to know it well enough to smoothly move through a video review that, you know, can't take up, an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Right.
Might be more difficult.
Absolutely. And it depends on, I think, the type of software. You know, it might be a good idea as well to do tutorials in such a format. That might work pretty well. We've kind of done that already with screen capture, but having two people do it and one person explaining to the other. For instance, I was talking to Rich and I was going to show him how to create a mask in Photoshop. He could ask the questions that the average person watching it would probably have as well.
And it might be questions you may not even think about.
Right. Being a power user, I wouldn't even think about it. Now, you guys are both pretty much power users. How often do you help other Mac users out, either family or friends?
Probably once, twice a week I help family and friends out.
Is it difficult for you? I mean, because being a power user, do you try to step back into what their expertise is?
It's not that difficult because I know the level there that I'm helping at, and I don't know, maybe the teaching experience I have goes into play. Like right now, I'm teaching Photoshop to high schoolers, so it kind of stays on the same level for me. If that makes any sense.
Do you do much helping people like that, Rich?
Unfortunately, up in the wilds up here of New Hampshire, there aren't that many Mac users around, so I find that I have a lot of people asking me Windows questions.
Which, I refuse. I just flat out refuse to help Windows now.
You try and help people, but Windows is so damn confusing, and it's just so unintuitive that it becomes impossible to do anything really helpful with that. So I get on the boards a lot. I get on the I'm on some of the forums, like the Mac World forums, and I answer a lot of questions in there. And I think the reviews that I write, I get questions from people who read the reviews at my Mac. And so I feel I'm helping that way. I tell you, I wish I could do more hands-on, and I'd like to see more Macs around here, more people I know with Macs.
I'll tell you what's helped me out a lot is, and I blogged about it a while back, was that website Log Me In that does remote access through the internet.
And oh, yes.
Instead of driving over to my grandmother's house or my friend's house, I just connect through Log Me In, and I can control her computer and say, this is what you need to do, or just do it for her and fix it in 5 minutes.
Now, do you think that Leopard's going to help you in that regard? Because that's one of the features of Leopard.
Isn't it, though? The problem is the other person has to have Leopard, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And a lot of Macs out there aren't going to be capable of running Windows. You got to have, what, an 866 megahertz or faster G4?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Yeah, and that's excluding a lot of people. A lot of computers out there will not be able to run it. In fact, I actually drove it down to Indiana. My brother-in-law has been a PC user for, oh, God, forever. And one of my brothers-in-laws is a diehard PC guy. I'm the diehard Mac guy. And the one that I gave the G4 Mac to has been a PC user, but not by choice. So this is his first Mac. And it's not going to be capable of running Leopard. I mean, it's upgraded as far as it will go with Tiger. So I'm kind of disappointed that he can't take advantage of a lot of these new technologies that are coming up. But speaking of Leopard, are you guys going to upgrade soon?
I'm waiting to see. Go ahead, Drew.
Go ahead, Don.
I'm waiting to see what happens with CS3 before I do anything. See if
I've got it on order. But I'm one of those guys. I'll order it. It'll sit here on my shelf, and I'll wait for 10.5.1 or 2 before I'll install it.
I'm just insane then, because I've got two machines. Well, I've got technically three machines that's more than capable of running Leopard. But I plan on going, Chad Perry, and I hope is going to come with me, to either the Ann Arbor or Grand Rapids Apple Store Friday night and pick up a copy of Leopard and probably that night install it on my MacBook.
That's going to be the test bed. First 500.
Yeah, and we plan on being one of those first 500 because I want a free T-shirt, damn it.
And I think it's great that you'll do that because you'll help guys like me who want to see what all the bugs are so that I don't get bitten by all that. So I appreciate it.
I do have Adobe CS3 on both legally. I have two copies of it, the print edition and the web edition premium packages that Adobe sent for review, and so we could do tutorials and stuff like that. I've got it on the MacBook Pro as well as the G5.
You're the perfect guinea pig.
Yeah, I'm going to test it. That's going to be. I use the Adobe CS3 all the time, so I can't imagine that it won't work, and I can't imagine too many things breaking. But you never know.
I could see like some features that maybe get disabled till they put a patch out or something you never use anyway that just may not.
Some obscure, yeah, ordering photos through Bridge or something.
Right. Can you even
something
do that?
Strange. I never do. Robert Hazelrig would be a person to ask that question.
See, I don't use Photoshop too much. I'm constantly using Dreamweaver for my weather website. So
you did a using Dreamweaver using Dreamweaver CS3 about a month ago now. An article on that, correct?
Yeah, I did a little kind of a free form type of how do I use it. And I'm thinking that people probably look at that program and it probably just scares the hell out of them because it's got so much to it. And frankly, it should.
yeah, absolutely.
And I thought it would be interesting to try and, have some other people take a different look at it, not from so much of a technical point of view, but, how does somebody actually use this thing?
Well, I was using Adobe Go Live to edit and post all the articles on the feature side at mymac.com. But ever since CS3 came out, I moved over to Dreamweaver. And it is a different beast than Go Live. There's a lot of things that I just don't use because I'm trying to conform Dreamweaver into my Go Live workflow because that's what I know.
Yeah.
But it seems to be very, very powerful. Do you think there's a big need for programs like Dreamweaver nowadays. I mean, so much of the work for HTML is SQL, PHP, using tools on the web that are free, backends. I don't know how often people are going to be using a Dreamweaver type of a massive application to create websites.
I think you're right. I think Dreamweaver has become almost too powerful for its own good. It's, you know, I can see corporate, you know, people using it for corporate websites and all that kind of stuff. I bought myself a copy of, what's it called? The one that,
RapidWeaver?
Yeah, RapidWeaver. Thank you. Yes, that one. I bought that one and I'm messing around with that for the past couple of days. I want to put up a smaller business site and, I'm having a few problems getting, you know, it has much less flexibility than a program like Dreamweaver. So I'm having a hard time trying to figure out how to move graphics around or get stuff to where I want it, the way I want it to look on the page. So
my problem with Dreamweaver is that I'm trying to do something very basic, but it's almost that it hides that basic functionality or it doesn't behave in the way that I think it should. Give you a prime example. In, let's say I have three columns on a page, and I want the center one, where I happen to have a graphic, I want that centered on the page. Well, with Go Live, I would simply highlight it, go down to that toolbar, and hit center it, and it would only center that paragraph. In Dreamweaver, if I do the same thing, the entire page becomes centered.
Right.
So I literally have to go in there and hand code it to center it. And I'm like, what? This is a bug. It shouldn't do this. I've got something. I've literally selected this text. And it does it in both the code side and the design side. And it doesn't matter. It centers everything. And I'm like, I have something selected. It should be intelligent enough to know he has this paragraph selected. So that's the only thing I'm going to center. I'm not going to center everything on the page. But yet, it does it every time. It drives me crazy.
It will assume things for you. I find when I started doing some work, I took some regular HTML classes and went through that. So I occasionally will find myself pulling up the HTML and actually, you know, hand editing right in there to get it to do something that I want it to do. So I don't disagree with you. It does do stuff like that, and it does make it difficult.
As easy as these programs are for us to use, or I should say to manage websites and stuff like that, having a basic understanding of HTML, I think, is probably more important than using the most powerful suite of tools that you could find that will automate a lot of the process for you. Because if you don't have that basic understanding when you go and when you have a problem, which inevitably is going to happen, you don't know how to fix it because the program is acting buggy.
Oh, absolutely. Having that HTML background has been so tremendously important to being able to go in and really do the edits. And like you say, when it's not doing what you need it to, or even being able to go in and look and say, hey, why is it doing that? You know, but a lot of the things that, you know, even the things that you're talking is under that window menu where they have all these different inspectors and behaviors and all that stuff in there. And, you know, you got to be Einstein to know every one of those things.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating.
Yeah.
I wish there was a simple button in Dreamweaver that I can click to say, you know, give me a simplified menu of the, you know, the 20 most popular features or commands that people use in the application, which Adobe could figure out pretty easily, I would think, and only show me those. Don't give me everything. I don't need to see the Java applet,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Toolbar when all I need is the QuickTime embed toolbar. That's what I'm looking for. But instead, it gives me everything.
Yeah.
So,
That's the flexibility that, you know, it tries to offer. But like you said, you know, I think it goes a little too far.
Well, I think Microsoft Office does the same thing. I was looking at screenshots of Office 08. Now, I haven't had a chance to play with it, but I have been a Microsoft Office user for, gosh, you know, 12 years. And I'm looking at the new interface, and I got to say, it looks pretty, But it's going to take a lot of people a long time to come to grips with that it's different than what it has been for the last decade. And yeah. I'm not sure if it's necessarily a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it looks pretty scary.
It does, especially when you compare it with the iWorks applications.
Is it similar to the Windows version?
No, not at all.
Because that's a nightmare to look at, too.
Well, they're using that whole ribbons scenario, yeah, right. Which as a concept is great, and it would probably be good for a newer type of application that isn't quite as powerful or has as many features. But when you try to add it to something that an Office product like Microsoft Office that does everything, even though the vast majority of the users are only using a small fraction of the power of the application, it becomes confusing. And I don't think it's necessarily conducive to work with a brand new interface. If I was an Office worker and I was using, and that was my bread and butter, using Microsoft Excel or PowerPoint or Word, and they drop this into my lap, I think it's going to slow down my productivity. It's not going to speed it up.
Well, I'm one of those guys that uses those three things at the office.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, what you find is that companies they're very reluctant to upgrade if it's working. Why spend the money?
Compatibility mostly. You're going to run into the problem that, especially if you're a company that works with a lot of outside vendors and that sort of thing, you run into compatibility problems pretty quickly. And the graphic design and production artists, this kind of business that I'm working in freelance pretty much all the time, if a new Adobe product comes out, they have to install it at least on one machine because there are going to be outside vendors that are going to use those new features in, say, Illustrator that we have to be able to convert back to CS2 or even CS, and you can't do that unless you have at least one machine that has the brand new version on.
So
compatibility is always an issue.
Well, the companies that I've worked in, that never seems to be a problem. I think the company I'm in now still has, I think it's PowerPoint 2003. So,
yeah, well, if it works.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. But I would like to use Keynote. You know, I just ordered iWork 08. I'm waiting for it to come, and I would like to. I couldn't do this on my last job, but I can bring my MacBook into this one, and I'd like to do the presentations that I need to do in Keynote rather than PowerPoint, because I just think it's a better looking program.
Absolutely, and my understanding is it's a lot easier to use and put stuff together in Keynote than it is in PowerPoint, because PowerPoint's almost become. You know, the thing is, when you see a PowerPoint presentation, you know it's a PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, and it's a drag.
Yeah, exactly.
It's boring. Oh God, you know, and you see, you know, the first thing I look for is that number of slides at the bottom, you know, 85. Yeah. Oh God. You know?
It's almost a cliche at this point. Oh, yeah. Here comes a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, exactly. And it's 85 slides. Oh God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh man, and we're only at number 22.
Yeah. Torture.
Yes, but I think you're right though that the Apple version Keynote is very slick. And I think it holds people's attention as long as you don't go overboard with it and use the cube transition between each other.
Yeah.
It rotates to the left. Now it rotates down. Now it rotates up again.
And then you can make it all explode.
Yes, exactly. It just kind of explodes everywhere.
And you're never going to get, at a PowerPoint, you're never going to get a memorable presentation. People don't seem to, they walk out glazed, you know, eyes glazed, and they forget everything you've just said.
Yep, absolutely.
It's so boring.
Now, in the Mac news this week, the big news, obviously, is Apple releases their financials. Let me just run through some of the numbers real quick. The company did post a revenue of $6.22 billion, which is a net quarterly profit of $904 million, which means Apple has a lot of money. Apple shipped 2,164,000 Mac computers. That represents a 34% growth over the year-ago quarter, and exceeding the previous quarter record for Mac shipments by 400,000. Let's stop right there for a second. That's a record quarter for Apple. Apple shipped more Macintosh computers by 400,000 than in any quarter in the company's history. That is an amazing number. I think that is
unbelievable.
Proof positive that more people are buying Macs than ever before.
And I am so pissed off that I didn't buy Apple at 10.
Yeah, tell me about it. The company also sold 10.2 million iPods during the quarter.
I think that number is
17% growth over a year ago quarter. They sold last quarter 17% more iPods than they did a year ago. Well, the year ago quarter.
Which is amazing that they're still selling so many iPods.
You would think that everybody that wanted an iPod would have one at this point.
Really?
But they keep coming out with these new ones, making you go, I want that one now. I want that
one.
Well,
but you got to look at the last quarter. They didn't have these new iPods in the last quarter.
But they had the iPhone. Is the iPhone counted as
an
iPod?
No, it's not.
Yeah, they counted that separately, didn't they?
They sold in the last quarter 1.119 million iPhones. Or in all of 2007, they've sold 1,389,000. So almost 1.5 million iPods iPhones have been sold this year.
And that's without the holiday season. Just imagine.
That's without, yes. And a lot of that was pre $200 price drop.
It's amazing.
And they just started selling them overseas.
Right.
So where do you do it? I can't imagine that the iPhone sales are going to slow down anytime soon.
And only go up from here, you would think.
Yeah. Well, look at the iPods.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to be pulling down a touch, as soon as they up the memory on that thing. But I'm gratified that they're selling so many more Macs. I was becoming a little concerned about the company moving, iPods and ITV.
Well, they got rid of the computer terminology from the corporate name. They're Apple Incorporated. They're not Apple Computer.
No.
So I'm with you, though, Rich. I was a little worried myself. Wow, are they going to get out of selling Macs? Are they going to become more of a Sony? Which, God, I hope not, the way Sony's going lately.
Really?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. When they sell that many Macintosh computers, well, it doesn't say that they sold them, they just shipped them, but I can't imagine that there's a big warehouse somewhere full of Mac computers that aren't selling.
No, I can't imagine
they're
either.
Selling.
Not with the market share numbers up.
No, forget about that for a minute. Apple makes something like 34% profit per machine.
Wow.
So in other words, they've got a 34% markup on each computer. What's Dell at? Like 2-4%?
Yeah, they have huge margins, Apple. So they're just raking in the bucks.
And not sending any of it our way. Could you imagine?
No.
Unless I'm one of the first 500 people, then I get a free T-shirt. Speaking of financials, Apple, their market cap now is larger than both IBM.
Right.
And Intel. They're fourth in the computer industry. It rates like this. It goes IBM, then Microsoft, then... No, wait a minute. I'm reading that wrong, aren't I? Market cap. IBM's at 17.1. Microsoft is at 21.8. Intel is at 24.8. Cisco is at 26.4. Apple at 47.6. And Google at 52.9. Generally, a higher PE ratio is unfavorable because it means that the price per earnings is greater. So at the current U.S. $186 per share, Apple's value as a company is $1.62 billion. So Cisco is worth I don't know. I don't get these numbers. No, here we go. Apple's worth $162 billion.
I guess we won't have Tim investing any money for us, Andoni.
Yeah.
IBM is $159 billion, and Intel's $155 billion. So they're worth more. Cisco's worth $189 billion. Google, $208 billion. And Microsoft, $290 billion. But the thing is, everybody always wants to put Google as a computer company. They're really not. They're an advertising company at this point, aren't they?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, what do they make? They don't make anything.
They don't make anything.
Right.
They have nothing.
Right. So how can you call them a computer company? That would be like calling Adobe a computer company.
Right. They're a software maker, and yeah. Google is a search engine / advertising company. I mean, they have some products like, you know, the search bar stuff that you can download and use on your computer. But for the most part, they sell advertising. That's where they make their money.
And they suck up the little companies and turn them into something big.
Right.
Which I hope happens to me one day. I can't really say what it is because it's so early in the process, but I mean, I actually am forming a startup with a partner, and we have an idea that we hope eventually we'll be able to roll out and have millions and millions of people use it. And if it happens and it becomes popular, we're selling out to Google in a heartbeat. The trick is to find someone that's more intelligent, at least in some technical areas, than you are. Well, and that's what I've done.
You shouldn't have any problem with that, will you?
No. There's a whole lot of those people out there. I can tell you that.
Hey, it all starts with an idea.
And, you know, the funny thing is my idea came about in the strangest way, and it was a logical step to get to. I know I'm being a little cagey, but I have to be, because if I say what it is, there's some pretty smart people out there that will easily beat us to the punch. But obviously one of the goals is to either reap a lot of money in investors or sell it to a big company like Google or Yahoo or Apple or somebody. And, I think that's not a bad strategy for anybody that comes up with an idea, because it's really hard to compete on the internet for real dollars.
And look at all the money that these guys who've done these startups make. I mean, you know, you can make a lot of money just by starting up something that becomes popular and selling it off. Absolutely, yeah, the way to go.
You see some of these companies that snap up some of these little websites that have attracted 2 or 3 million users, and they buy them for like $10 million. And you're like, oh, that's what they bought for $10 million?
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you're the first one on the block with that idea, then you really hit pay dirt.
Exactly. And the idea, that's actually my idea, and I kind of played with it in my head for a while, and then I got a hold of someone who I usually run my ideas past. And this person usually finds flaws that I didn't see, which is a great thing to have. And I ran this idea past this person. He slept on it and came back and said, I don't see a downside. I don't see a problem that he usually does when it comes to my harebrained ideas. And so we're going to run with it. He's going to do the tech side of it. I'm going to do everything else. And we'll see what happens.
Just make sure you can get the MyMac staff in for $10 a share, will you?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, one of the reasons that I would like to become a millionaire, other than the obvious reason, is that I would love to be able to sink real money into MyMac.com. And I talked about this on the podcast last week as well.
Yeah, you did.
I'd love to be able to sink money into the website and just make it extremely popular, more than it already is. And extremely busy, you know.
Hey,
I would love to be able to compete directly against, you know, Macworld Online or any of those other Mac websites that are out there. Offering something that people really want. I would love to see more video. I don't think enough people are doing that, to be honest. I think it's a super easy way of learning. You sit there and you watch a little 5-minute video, and all of a sudden you're much more proficient with whatever the technology is.
I learn so much more when I can see it.
Yeah, so do I.
And see somebody doing it. I'm a visual learner. It would be great, and you could get us on staff too, you know. It would be
absolutely
terrific.
Ka-ching.
Yeah.
So once you guys do upgrade to Leopard and it's running on your machines, what are the features of Leopard that you're most looking forward to?
I'm looking for Time Machine. I think that's the big one for me. Time Machine just looks like a great way to back up and go backwards if you accidentally delete something or you want to go back to a version you did earlier. That's the big one for me.
I was reading about Time Machine just today, and I was thinking the same thing as Donnie, that it would be a great, you know, just a great thing to have to be able to go back, you know, and pull out something that you might have deleted earlier. But I was reading that if you hook up, you know, an external hard drive or you're doing a lot of video, it's going to be backing up all that.
Yep.
And if you added up all that stuff, we're talking about, you know, you need a huge drive to be able to keep track of all that stuff.
And I'm wondering if you fill up a drive, can you just plug another one in and it just automatically starts using that one?
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions about Time Machine. I'm fascinated by it. I think it's really interesting, but on the other side, from a technical standpoint, I'm concerned about, you know, what it might take to actually be useful.
I think I read you can set what it backs up, like choose how often it backs up and maybe say, okay, only back up this folder incrementally or instead of doing the whole hard drive. I'm not sure.
Or don't do this drive, you know, if you stick it, because if you connect an external to it, then it's going to back that up too. So, you know, another external and you're accessing that, doing something with it, then it's going to back that up too.
I'm looking forward to getting my hands on and playing with it because that was one of my concerns. I've got like a terabyte of storage sitting on the G5.
Wow. Yeah.
And I don't want it to back everything up, obviously. In fact, some of that is storage space. It is backup, but it's also some of that stuff is where those files reside. I don't keep all my video files on my internal hard drive. Those are sitting on an external drive, and I don't need to back those up because they're already backed up.
Right, and what I was reading was when you hook up that external drive and access that video stuff, it's going to start backing that up. So, you know, hopefully it's got a decent preference for paying, and it's, you know, you can exclude drives or whatever. You know.
I'm wondering how long it's going to take when you first install it to start backing everything up. And how much of a hit on performance on your machine are you going to get when it starts backing? Can you specify when it's going to start doing its thing every day?
Yeah, I mean,
those are all questions that I think that we're not going to find out. We'll know this time next week.
Yeah. It seems like a great idea, but then so did File Vault.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And what a dog that was.
But also,
this is a great, I think it's not going to replace something like Super Duper.
No.
Because you're not going to be able to back up your entire hard drive to another disk.
Not bootable.
And then, yeah exactly. Yeah. If something happens, you can't just plug that disk in and you're back up and running.
Right.
So, and my other question is if, heaven forbid, I lose a hard drive. I put a new hard drive in the machine. I reinstall the OS. I reinstall all my applications. Can I then use Time Machine to pull back my files?
I got the impression the Time Machine could be a full backup besides just the mini backups.
I think we're going to have to wait to find out. What do you guys think about Spaces? I don't think a lot of people talk about it, but it's one of those applications. As a user of two monitors on the G5, Spaces isn't necessarily something that I need, but I can see the benefit to it.
I'm looking forward to Spaces. That's one of the things that I'm looking forward to because I've usually got I do a lot of video editing with my family video, and I've got windows open all over the damn place. And to be able to open up different apps and move, you know, and be able to access and move in between them, I think that'll be fabulous.
So
I'm looking forward to that.
I wasn't too big on Spaces at first, but now that I'm teaching Photoshop a lot, I can see the benefit of instead of putting everything in the dock and waiting from class to class and hiding stuff in the dock, I can just hide it in a different space and just switch back and forth while I do something else during non-teaching time, like the internet and checking email without all those windows around or in the dock or all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, iChat, the things with iChat looks pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, that looks fun. Plus the remote desktop thing if you have the laptop on both ends.
Well, I don't think that's going... Well, yeah, that is going through iChat. But there's a difference between iChat and taking control of another computer and back to my Mac, which lets you access your home computer from anywhere in the world, providing that it's turned on and online. You think that's potentially a little confusing for people?
I'm confused by it. Do they seem similar and different? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I've been using Timbuktu for many years. Mostly if I'm in one room and I need to access email on the main machine, I'll just Timbuktu into it instead of getting my lazy butt up and walking 10 feet to where the computer is. But it's just handy. A lot of the times I'm doing editing of articles and stuff in one room, and I need one file that's open on the G5. Well, it's a lot easier to Timbuktu in, simply copy the information, copy it over to the Mac I'm working on, and continue. I want to know how well the new solutions are going to work. Because with iChat, I can't access my home computer because I can't be chatting with myself.
And you have to give yourself permission to access.
Exactly. So, and nobody sitting in front of that computer really doesn't do me any good. But back to my Mac does do exactly that.
You can go in through one way, give yourself permission through iChat, then go back and go through iChat.
I'm wondering if back to my Mac almost sounds like a VPN. So I'm kind of looking forward to using it and seeing if it will act as a VPN.
But like Donnie said, I think it's confusing.
Yeah, I think it will be until people get their hands on it.
Yeah.
Does it seem kind of like the Finder is becoming more like iTunes to you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I like the Stacks idea. I mean, that seems interesting.
Yeah, that is kind of... do you like the way the dock looks now, though, or the way it's going to be looking in Leopard?
It doesn't bother me. I think there's too many people all over the web are taking too much time worried about what the dock looks like.
Well, it's something that you're going to see every single time you use your computer.
Right, but it's not going to... I think it... I mean, it should look good, but I think people just... There's too much being written about, you know, the dock doesn't look good on the side or the dock doesn't look good here. I mean, to me, it's not
well,
that
Well, Apple
big deal.
Doesn't...
You know, I'm with you on that, Donnie.
In there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Donnie, because really the dock is, and the whole Finder, really, it's just the beginning interface and how long you're really looking at that before you go off and do whatever the heck you're doing.
That's true.
I think QuickView is going to be really nice.
I think that combined with the cover flow is really interesting. I think that could... I like that. I like the... And you're right. I don't always want to launch either Preview or Adobe Acrobat just to quickly look through a PDF document.
Absolutely.
It'd be great to be able to do it through the Finder.
I think it's going
to
be a huge time saver in finding what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think you're going to use much of that stationery and email? I don't see myself ever using it, but maybe once or twice to check it out. But then it's going to be one of those things. It's like, ugh.
I think it'll be.
And what happens when someone gets it that's not on mail?
I was wondering that too. Is it going to come in as attachments, like JPEG attachments that don't open?
I think so. This is not an original concept. I mean, they had this in what is it called? I want to say Entourage, but the Windows version. Outlook has had this for years. I don't see a big deal. I mean,
what happens if you send from Outlook to say a Mac? Does it stay? Do the layouts stay?
I gotta imagine that the text becomes just plain text, and all the pictures become attachments. You can always tell when someone's on a Windows machine when you get an attachment and it's like their signature.
Right.
You're like, oh, they're on a PC.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that looks horrible.
I think that'll be
put it in the right spot.
You know, like you said, try it out once and then, oh, that's nice, and hardly ever use it again.
Then never use it again. I kind of think that's the way that's going to go. You guys looking forward to the official release of Safari 3? Because I've been using the beta of Safari 3 now for, well, pretty much since it came out.
And what's the big difference?
It's more compatible. There's a lot of websites that I've gone to in the past with Safari 2 or Safari 1 that just didn't act right. They didn't perform the way they should have. But with Safari 3, it does. And I'd give you an example if I could remember any off the top of my head, but I can't. But it is more compatible.
Yeah.
With Safari 2, for instance, the company I've been freelancing at for like 18 months now, I couldn't access their mail server correctly through that version. It would either just completely refuse my login or things would just look janky. With Safari 3, it worked fine. And I knew that it was Safari causing the problems because I would launch Firefox and it would look great from there.
Yeah.
And all the web type of interfaces for the email clients that I was accessing, they weren't working at all with Safari. Like, I couldn't set my forwarding email, or I couldn't set my vacation messages. It just wouldn't stick. But it would if I used Firefox. With Safari 3, it does work.
Yeah, and I have had the same problem with a few sites, and I noticed that, yeah, I was able to open them in Firefox. So, you know, other than that, though, I mean, for the most part, Safari works for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a fan of Safari. I like Camino better.
You know, there's a lot of people, a lot more people than you would think that uses Camino, and I've tried it. I don't see the big deal over using Safari. And whatever web browser you're using, here's the biggest reason I use Safari, Donnie, is because I do use my .Mac account to sync my bookmarks between all my computers. So no matter what Mac I'm using, which one of my Macs I'm using, I still have the access to exactly the same
bookmarks,
links and bookmarks and my email signature. Everything is going to be the same no matter which machine I'm on. But if I use Camino or Firefox, that's not the case. Then I have to find a third-party solution that will sync them.
Yeah.
So that's the only real reason I use Safari as far as functionality. It's just convenient for me.
You know, go ahead, Don.
I think I like Camino because it's, there's no, none of all the bells and whistles Firefox has or could have. And I think Safari, I just found it to be, like you said, some sites don't work with the older Safari, and Camino has always just been good at reading most of the sites I need to get to, so just stuck with it.
Yeah.
You know, when you mentioned syncing, it brought up a pet peeve that I have. You know, I got the MacBook that I'm talking to you through now, and I got my G5, and I have most of my music on my G5. And wouldn't I like to sync my iTunes between the MacBook and the G5? And there seems to be no easy way to do that.
No, there's not. And I don't think that's going to... Leopard's not going to do anything to solve that problem either.
No.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to just sync your podcast subscriptions between iTunes on different computers?
Yeah, God, even that would be nice, yeah.
Yeah. You know what would be nice for me is if I could access... I can already access my music library. If I'm on the MacBook Pro in the kitchen and I'm listening to my iTunes library that's sitting on the G5, I can listen to it just fine. But there's a lot of music on there that I haven't rated yet. In fact, I have a whole automated playlist that's all unrated. So I listen to that occasionally. As I'm listening, I'll rate the music. But if I'm accessing it from the other room, I can't change the ratings of those songs. And I wish I could.
Yeah.
Because I would like to listen to my music in there rather than in front of the G5. But I can't change the star rating. And I know it sounds like a simple little thing, but to me, it's significant because I want to change it.
Well, I think if Apple expects us to have desktops and laptops or even multiple laptops, it needs a better way of syncing all of this stuff so that it's all the same.
Or would it be better to have the laptops be that you could tell them to operate more in a dumb terminal type of fashion, and that what you're using is actually on your main machine?
Yeah.
Would that be more helpful? I think that's kind of what Back to My Mac kind of does, because it replaces what you're seeing with that remote desktop. So you're literally using your Mac at home.
Yeah, no, I see the point.
I would love that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. You know, I don't know. I'd have to look at it to see if it would really fill this need that I seem to have to want to be able to carry what I have on my G5, wherever I go. You know, I'd like to be able to sync up my iPhoto and my my iTunes. And boy, I tell you, I've been trying to look for a solution there, and I just can't find one.
No, I'm not aware of any that really syncs them up correctly. Anyways,
yeah.
Anything short of carrying it around on a portable hard drive, but even then, if you change the ratings on it on the MacBook, that's not going to reflect in the other iTunes library when you plug it back in, because those ratings are metadata within iTunes, not the MP3 itself,
yeah,
or the MP4 or whatever it is. Yeah, I think you're right. That is a problem. So how many Mac users do you think, percentage-wise, is going to update to Leopard right away?
Within a week, maybe.
You think so?
I'd say
within a week,
maybe 60%.
You think it's that high?
You really think it's that high, huh?
I think there's a lot of people that have been waiting for Leopard, and I think the delay from when was it supposed to be released or expected, like earlier in the year, whenever it was, I think that's made the demand even stronger.
I just think that the number of people that are first-time adopters is low because a lot of us sit back and want to see the bugs get worked out before we jump in.
I think that's probably...
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, I don't know, though. When Tiger came out, it seemed like everybody upgraded to Tiger right away.
I waited like 6 months.
And then I would go to clients' houses, and they're still, running Mac OS 10.2. And I'm like, oh, God. And it's like, oh, you got to stop and think, okay, what do I do here? I had one client. I've only been to their house once. I get a call out of the blue, and that's usually how it happens. I heard that through so-and-so, and so-and-so told me that you're a Mac guy, and you can fix them. Huh? Yeah, sure. Well, we've got an older Mac here, and we run our, what was it, glider business. They tow another plane up in the air and cut it loose and you glide down. So I went over there, and it was like a Mac Plus.
Wow.
I mean, it was running system 605.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I literally could not remember how to do almost anything on it.
And they were probably running the software that only runs on that version, and there's nothing.
Well, they had a lot of custom software, some old database program.
A stack of floppies?
I think Fox Pro was on it or something.
Stack of floppies next to it?
Yeah, there was a stack of floppies and an external 20-megabyte hard drive that was SCSI'd in.
But that probably cost $3,000,
Their biggest concern was that all the icons looked generic icons. Well, I knew how to fix that. We have to rebuild the desktop.
Yeah.
But I could not for the life of me remember how to rebuild a desktop on Mac OS 6. I'm like, oh my God, how do I do this? I felt like a functioning illiterate. I mean, I had no idea. I eventually figured it out.
How do you rebuild it on System 6?
No, I don't remember now. This was like 2 years ago now. It was a key combination, I couldn't remember what the key combination was.
Yeah.
Now it would be a lot easier. And here comes the benefit of the iPhone. Because I'm at their house. They were still on dial-up modem, too. And I brought my laptop, but because they were on dial-up modem, I couldn't access the internet or anything. But with an iPhone, even on the slow edge network, at least I could pull up a web browser and Google.
Right.
How to do it. And, there's the answer. Click, click, click. And you're all done.
Yeah.
But I was holding my iPod when I was in there, and I was thinking, my iPod has 20 times the storage as this entire computer system. And that's sick.
And it's a lot smaller,
too. It's just sick. It's a lot smaller, and quite honestly, it was a lot more powerful in probably almost every regard. I mean, my iPhone could have run all of NASA when they went to the moon.
Isn't that a scary thought?
It's crazy. It's an encouraging thought.
I think the pioneer spacecraft that's out past the end of the universe or something out there, I think it only had like a wobble in it.
Yeah, it was not much, that's for sure.
So we certainly,
don't you wish that political... how should I phrase this? Don't you wish the politics of the world advanced as quick as our technology does?
I don't know.
That there was actual money in peace. I mean, there's money in creating a better widget. And Apple seems to know that better than most companies. They give us stuff that we didn't even know we wanted until we saw it, and then we went, God, I got to have that. Don't you wish that the political process worked the same way? I mean, if it did, we'd be in a utopia at this point,
I don't know. When you get into politics, you always worry what what you wish for may not be what you think.
That's true of technology as well.
Isn't it though?
Do you think it's a little dubious for Apple to say there's 300 new features in Leopard?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I keep seeing that 300. I like to see the discrete list.
There's a button that says see all 300 plus new features, and if you click it, there they are. And
some of those features, though, are like...
I know. Address book, there's 2. AppleScript, there's 8.
I think they count a feature as all the windows having the same look.
Right, exactly. One of the things that's not getting a lot of attention right now is the whole widget thing that Steve Jobs talked about a year and a half ago. No one right now is talking about that. The whole you can sync your widgets with .Mac now, which is kind of cool. Although I want different widgets on different machines.
I use widgets. Go ahead, Don.
I think widgets have become, there's so many of them, it's so saturated that people, it's kind of a second thought
at this point.
But I think what's even cooler is the tool that lets you make your own, like from a web page.
Yeah, you can make your own widget.
Yeah.
That might be cool.
Because I liked widgets at first. And then, like you said, Donnie, I mean, then I got overload. And I can't remember the last time I launched the widgets. Take a look at what was going on with them.
I have a couple widgets that, like one checks my Gmail account, so it gives me a number. So I know it's time to go check my Gmail account because there's 5 unread messages in it.
Well, that's a handy one.
Yeah, and I like that one a lot. There's another one that's called iStat widget, which I probably use. It's always there. It's iStat Nano. But it gives me a quick overview of whatever my computer is doing.
I have that one.
But I bet I know the one that you guys have left on that comes stock from Apple, and that's the weather widget. Everybody keeps the weather widget.
Well,
and everybody always makes it for the 6 or 7 day forecast.
I use that and open the dictionary one.
Yeah.
Since I run a weather website, you know, I got several weather widgets up there. But, none of them give as good information as richlufko.com, so.
Yeah. Richlufko.com is where you want to go if you're going to see the weather in New England.
Weather in New England, right.
There's a couple widgets that I find very helpful. The iStat Nano is really cool. It gives you an overview of, like, your CPU, your memory, your disk, your network, the processes that are running, uptime, battery, if you're on a laptop, fans.
Yeah, I have that one. That one is a good one. And Donnie's right. I use that dictionary one more than you think I did. That dictionary one's handy.
You know what I use for my dictionary most of the time? Google. there's one called Application Update that I learned from the Dashboard a Minute when Guy Searle was doing that. That is a fantastic widget. It really is. It literally will scan your hard drive for all the applications that you got, and it will check against Mac Update, Version Tracker, and Apple.com what the latest version of that application is. Like I run it quite a bit, but I just ran it, and like right now it's saying that my AOL radio, which I have 1.2 installed, there's now a 1.2B1 that I could download. Disk Warrior, it's saying I've got 303 and 4 is out. What is that noise in the background?
A printer came on here.
Oh, it sounded very strange.
I've got it's a program like that, but it's better. It's called AppFresh, and it does the same thing, but it's in your applications folder, and it's also free. I think it's still a beta version or something, but not only will it find what you need, it'll download and install it for you if it can.
Well, see, you literally have to click it, and it will take you to the website, like, for instance, Google Earth. It's telling me that my Google Earth, I'm running 4.0. It's telling me that Google Earth 4.2 is out, and I can get it either from Mac Update or Version Tracker just by clicking the link in the dashboard widget. And it'll take me to that page, and I can download it and then install it. I wouldn't want this to install by itself for the simple reasoning being I want to be able to check the notes to see that there's no incompatibility.
Well, the program won't install it unless you say, yes, I want you to update this program. Yes, I want you to update this program. So you can pick and choose, but if you say do it, it'll download whatever you select all at the same time, and if it can install it, it'll do it for you.
You know what I found that I really like this application probably more than anything else is that it reminds me of applications that I've got on my hard drive that I forgot about.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, look, there's a, I forgot all about that. I have Transmit. And, well, that's probably a bad choice because I actually use Transmit every time I do the podcast.
Yeah. You want to put something up on my Mac or about these widgets? You know, this like
not,
Donnie said,
not enough hours in the day.
There's so many of them that, you know, to actually pick a good one is difficult.
It would be nice if one of the writers out there who aren't blogging much just simply puts up a blog. Find a new widget, put up a blog about it.
You know. Yeah, the one widget I use all the time, it does that, takes those long URLs and turns it into one of those tiny URLs so that when you email somebody, it doesn't chop it in half. I use that thing constantly.
Nice. One of the problems, though, with widgets is that you can't do anything else on your Mac if the widgets are forward.
Right.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Like Apple has a new movies in the dashboard widget, which is great. But what if I want to continue browsing the internet or check my email while I'm watching that? I can't. It's. I hate.
Isn't there a keyboard thing you can do to pull a widget off?
Yeah, you can hold the keyboard down or hold something down and pull it out, and it stays up. Unless you access dashboard again, and then it disappears. Oh. But there's applications. I know there's little hacks out there, but why should we have to go for little hacks or some strange key combination? There should be a simple checkbox, leave on desktop.
Right.
You know, or even a little checkbox on each widget. If you click it, it stays there after the dashboard goes away.
That would be nice.
I can't figure out why. Well, that combined with spaces, I would put all my widgets in one space. And anytime I wanted to access it, it's right there.
That's a cool idea.
It kind of already is in spaces in that, you know, I just, for me, I put my mouse in the bottom right-hand corner and dashboard.
Right, I was going to say dashboard technically is a space, so.
Is a space, but I don't like how it darkens everything else. The whole desktop kind of dims a little bit, and now my dashboard is forward.
Well, you certainly can't do anything else after you've launched it. That's it.
No. And you can only really have one dashboard going or one widget going to the forefront at any one time.
Right.
I used to have a student that would, and if he's listening, you know who he knows who he is, but he would download as many widgets as he could and have them all running at once. I think he had 400 or 500 running at once at one point. He had the little red bouncing ball widget and the widget that,
you know what's funny?
Nothing.
Is to, and this goes back to the iStat Nano that I was talking about. Like, I just brought it up, and I like the processes because it shows how much of the computer, of what on the computer is taking all your processing power.
Right.
Right now, GarageBand is taking 80% of my computer right now. 88%. But what's strange is Skype is taking 33%.
that makes sense.
That seems to be over 100% there. No, obviously this is a multi-core machine, so that's probably where that comes from. But still, it's like,
what are you running the G7 there? Or what?
Yeah, I tell you, Audio Hijack Pro is taking 7.1%. Windows Server is taking 6.8%, and Safari's taking 6.2%.
That's the future that they don't tell you about. Time Machine's going to send you into the future.
Well, I wonder how many processors are going to be taken up on just the eye candy that Apple's introducing with Leopard.
Yeah.
I I don't know what site it was. It was like First Impressions of Leopard. And everything said, everything's flying now. Mail's flying. Safari's flying.
I read that too. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it then.
The guy said it was faster. Yeah. Mail was faster. Everything seemed to be quicker.
Anything you guys want to touch on before we get out of here? Anything that you've been thinking about? Well, I'm going to be on the podcast. I hope he talks about this. Open floor night.
No, I wasn't sure exactly what we'd be talking about since, the agenda. I missed getting that email.
Agenda? Yeah. Why would we have an agenda? It's just a podcast.
just make sure we get that podcast bonus check.
That's right, yeah. That'll be coming in the mail. Keep an eye out for it. I PayPal it, so you'll get it quicker.
Well, when I listened to the last podcast, I was thinking, geez, you know, okay, I would answer this question that way. But then you didn't ask me any of those questions, so.
This is the third time I've been on the podcast, and each mm-hmm. time I think it was pretty much like this, improv the whole way.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is more fun in a way.
It is, and I think it's more fun to listen to because some of the podcasts that I've checked out seem so scripted
right.
that it's like, oh, I kind of wish they... There's a lot of different tree branches that they could have gone from this point right here, and they don't.
Right, if it's not on the paper, we're not going that way.
Right, and actually some people on some shows will actually say, let's get back on topic, and it's like, wait, you know what? This isn't a radio show. This isn't a television show. This isn't 2020. If you go off topic on an interesting topic, run with it. Go with it. I had no idea we were going to talk about widgets today, but I bet a whole bunch of people right now are going to download either iStat widget or the applications update widget that I was talking about. A lot of people are going, oh, that'd be something cool to have, and they'll go check it out.
This isn't 2020? Did I get on the wrong... Did I make the wrong call?
I'm Baba Wawa.
They do have a 2020 podcast now with the full episode and audio, I think.
You know, it's amazing how many programs are in iTunes free yeah. now as podcasts.
Yeah.
CNN has a whole, just a truckload. They have one that's called In Case You Missed It, which is like a 5-minute recap of a couple of the stories that they've done. But it's never a reporter. It's just like raw footage from a scene. That's kind of interesting to see.
And all the radio, so many radio shows re-air their stuff in iTunes.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just full of those.
Well, I became a fan of Wait, Don't Tell Me because of podcasting. I only got to hear it a few times on the radio, and I never the whole thing because it was never at a convenient time for me on the weekend. But because of the podcast, I listen to it every week now. It's a great show. It's funny. It's topical, and it's free. It doesn't cost me a thing. And I listen to it on my agenda, not their agenda.
Well, that's
the power of podcasting.
Yeah, that's the part I like best.
Yeah, and I think Apple's done a really smart thing when it came to incorporating podcasting into the iPod and iTunes, in that if you stop listening to a show and you come back to it a couple days later after you've listened to a whole bunch of other stuff, the iPod remembers where you stopped listening and picks up right there. Now, that may seem like a small little thing, but actually, that's huge.
And you know what else? If you sync it to iTunes, iTunes will start up right where you left off on your iPod,
right,
which I really like.
Off. Right. Yep. Well, I think the iPod is nothing but a portable iTunes.
Yeah.
If you look at it that way, it makes sense.
It's true.
Go ahead, Rich.
Portable iTunes. And especially with something like the iPod Touch there, you know, I mean, literally you can access the store and everything. So,
I do want to talk about the iPhone a little bit here before we get out of here. I have a number of iPods. I've talked about that on past shows. There goes my phone ringing again. Up until the iPhone came out, I was using a 60 gig iPod with video. That was my main iPod. And I still used it after I got the iPhone because all my music, everything is on that machine. A machine, that's kind of hard to say when you're talking about iPod. Everything's, my entire music library is on that iPod, right? But how often do I listen to the majority of the stuff that's on there?
Mm.
Not that often. I'm listening to podcasts or I'm listening to my top-rated stuff. Ever since I found out that the iPhone would work with my the adapter that I have in my car, the iCarPlay,
yeah.
I'm listening to my phone. I'm listening to the iPhone for podcasting and most of my music. And it's starting to replace my iPod, which that wasn't my intention when I got the iPhone. But I carry a computer backpack with me most of the time. My laptop's in there and my iPod's in there. My iPod was sitting in there for 2 weeks before I remembered that it was still in there. And I pulled it out. By the way, Donnie...
Yeah.
Your book just fell from a higher shelf and landed right next to the mix board. That was that noise you just heard? That was Maxpiration, Learn Your Mac, Volume 1, the first 50.
That was perfect timing.
I don't know how you arranged that so we could promote this before we got off the podcast.
Remember those little elves I told you about that right out of the articles I sent with that?
I know some people are thinking, yeah, right. Did you hear it fall?
It sounded like a shelf fell.
Oh, it absolutely. It sounded like a gunshot almost.
I wish we were recording this in video because that was Donnie's book. It was up on the shelf and it was sitting next to my book, the iTunes plus iPod book. And it literally just slid right off the shelf, went over the 19-inch, the second monitor, and landed between, what is this thing called? I just got it in for review. The Ped 3 from Thought Out Biz. It's an iPhone holder. It's really cool. It's a little stand. I'm going to review it here pretty soon. I'm going to do a video review of it. It's really
nice. Donnie, did you make that happen psychically between, or what?
That's what I want to know, because it landed right next to the mixboard. And that was crazy. I mean, it landed right there. I did want to mention the book now that somebody reminded me of it. You know what we need to do, Donnie, is start posting once a week a blog post.
Okay.
To start generating some sales.
I was just because thinking, fall into the lap of everybody that listens to the podcast.
This would be a great... How much does this book cost if you order a hard copy?
I think it's $15. I'll look it up real quick.
It's less than 20 bucks,
yeah.
Though. This is an excellent book for anybody that's new to the Mac or anybody that knows someone that's new to the Mac. It's got a lot of pictures, so it's not just all text. You're going to see screen captures of whatever Donnie's writing about. It's got and it's not just technical stuff, because as well as the Macspiration articles that are reprinted here, we also reprinted the thumbnails. And those are just cartoons. So there's a lot of fun stuff in here as well. And, you know, all this came from the website, Donnie. So none of the graphics are greater than 72 dpi, but it looks damn good. It looks really, really good.
And the print,
it's print on demand through Lulu.com, which I think the quality is excellent that they do with print wise.
I'm impressed.
It's $14.99 hard paperback, really, but printed version.
Now, how much of that goes your way when someone orders a copy?
You know what? I don't remember.
So many people. Donnie's bought so many new cars because of his profits from
little matchbox
that he
cars.
Just can't remember.
Or is Donnie waiting for the first one?
My wife was looking at this, and she didn't realize at first that this was who had written this book. She didn't really look at the cover with the big MyMac logo on there. She just kind of slid it to herself and started paging through it. She actually, I don't know which one she stopped and read, but she actually read an entire article that you had written. She went, oh, I didn't know that. And it was about burning stuff in iPhoto.
That's cool.
Or iPhone albums or something. And then she saw the cartoon about the new deluxe shuffle.
Yeah.
And the cartoon that she wrote that has, you know, like a flashlight on it and a erasable, refillable pen. You know, it was just funny. And she went, this is really good. And then she closed it and she went, oh. And then she looked on the back and there's my name on the back. She goes, oh, do you know this person? And I went, yeah, those were all articles at MyMac.com. So that tells you how much my wife actually, you know, visits the site.
Well, my grandmother's read it cover to cover at least once.
Yeah, but that's, like, required from grandmothers.
she's learned from it, too. It's taught her more how to use her Mac at home.
Well, that's the thing. I think that anybody who bought this, regardless of how sophisticated you think you are, you're always going to get something new. So it's worth definitely dropping 15 bones and getting a nice edition. You can buy an electronic version as well. We probably need to set that up at MyMac.com.
I can set that up at Lulu, too, to buy an electronic version.
And let's make a little bit of money off of the thing and help people out at the same time, which is kind of what I started MyMac for in the first place, was to give people ideas of what they could do and how they could use their Mac. Reviews were the main thing that I was doing at the time. So this is just really a continuation of that, how to use your computer. You're going to start including Leopard stuff in your future columns, I take it. Because you've already got enough material for a second edition.
We got another. We could do the next 50 or...
The second 50.
The second 50 or the first 100.
The first 100, maybe the first 100. But then again, it might be nice to have two different volumes.
Right. Or do both.
Volume two.
Volume two. The thing is with Lulu, I've been thinking about doing maybe a best of my Mac and eventually do my own stuff, put all my own writing together, create a book, and order it myself. So my kids in the future will have a hardcover copy of the stuff it's not very good, but at least they'll say, yeah, well, you know, this is what my dad did. Which is kind of important when you're a parent. You want to leave something behind so your kids have some proof of your existence. You know what I mean?
Right.
You mean other than the belt marks?
Other than the belt marks, yeah, definitely. I started MyMac.com maybe a year after my first daughter was born. So she grew up. She's never really known anything but what dad does the stuff on the computer. And the other kids, you know, 4 years old and another one coming up, they'll never know anything from before. So it's kind of nice to put these little time capsules together. And that really goes for anybody else out there that's writing anything. If you want to kind of share and preserve what you've done, don't count on the internet always having a copy of your stuff. You know, if you write poetry and you post it online or anything like that, think about a site like Lulu that you can literally create your own book. It doesn't really matter if anybody else, you know, buys it or not, because they're print on demand. They're only going to print one copy that you order yourself. So be it. They're still making money. And then you've got a hard copy that you can pass on to future generations, which I think is important.
I've got all the children's books I've illustrated with that a friend of mine have written are on sale through Lulu, and done a couple of how to draw books through Lulu. It's a great site.
Well, hopefully more people listen to the podcast will go up there and order a copy. We're actually recording this on Wednesday night. We'll post this Friday night. So between now and then, Donnie, you should make a blog post on the blog site of mymac.com so people could find it quickly and order a copy if they want.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I'll do it tonight.
Do it tonight. So look for Donnie's blog post at mymac.com. It probably won't be right at the top because chances are one or two other people will post a blog post by then. And hey, did you guys, before we're running a little over than what I usually like to, but oh well. Did you notice that we've got a new blogger at mymac.com by the name of Brad Jasper?
Was that it was a Camino post, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Well, and he'd had one before that, or a couple before that. He actually is, I was browsing the internet, came across his site, and I think I was the one who contacted him, but he might have contacted me. He contacted me and wanted to know if we could work together on some kind of a, you know, links or something. And his website was MacTips.org. And I checked it out, and it was a pretty good site. I was like, wow, this is great. So rather than just putting up a static banner on his site and our site and kind of linking them together a little bit and throwing some traffic at each other, I said, what if I, I read a lot of his archives. I said, what if I just gave you blog access at mymac.com? So when you have a new blog post, you know, you just post it at mymac as well. Doesn't take any extra work on your part, maybe a couple clicks. And they'll drive some traffic your way, and it will give our reader some, you know, little quick tips that they could take with them the rest of the day. And that's how that came about. So if you guys are listening, check out Brad Jasper at mymac.com. He's the MacTips.org guy. And, you know, it's just little tips, little things that will maybe help you in your workflow. It's neat. I like it.
Hey, little tips are extremely helpful.
That's right. Definitely. Only other things up at mymac.com right now, other than my video review, is a Pixelmator review from our own Donnie. How was that program, Donnie?
I liked it a lot. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a Photoshop killer that I've heard it called, but I'd say it's very close to Photoshop Elements. And
I think it's a program you're going to have to really keep an eye out in the next 12 months, because with Leopard coming out, there's a lot of underlying graphic technologies in Leopard that other applications could take advantage of.
Definitely, and it's so easy to use, and it's cheaper than Photoshop Elements, so there's a download demo. I would say definitely download the demo and check it out.
Well, Photoshop Elements hasn't been updated in a while, and it doesn't look like Adobe's going to release a version at least until next year. I think the last date I heard was next summer.
Wow, gosh.
The Mac version? Yeah, I thought, wow, that's kind of a long way.
Wow.
But there seems to be a lot of Pixelmator type of applications coming out now that do transparencies and layers and basic photo editing applications that are pretty cheap, but yet still powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I've reviewed a ton of these smaller company programs that are close to competing with the big guys and a lot cheaper. Like Art.
Well, when you look at Photoshop, how often? Yeah, what was the
other? ArtRage was like a very close to a painter type program. I think I could be wrong. $20 or $25, maybe, and there's a free version.
A lot of cash for an Adobe program. A lot of cash.
A lot of cash, and I think probably Photoshop for people who are just quickly taking pictures and want to edit their little snapshots, they don't need Photoshop.
It's way over.
But yeah, they may need a little bit more than what iPhoto has built.
Sure, right.
So here's these applications that might just be what they're looking for. Pixelmator looked pretty cool. I like the menus, and it was a good review. I like the toolbar. Looks awful familiar. I don't know why. I mean, if you know Photoshop, you're going to know how to use this application.
You'll have no problem learning it. It
looks kind of
prettier.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it looks kind of like Photoshop, but in iPhoto's photo editing, kind of that black transparent look to it.
And it's more, I guess, user-friendly looking, more everyman looking, less intimidating. How's that?
That's probably good. I think a lot of people would appreciate a less intimidating photo editing application. If I didn't know Photoshop so well, I would definitely start using it. But I'm such a Photoshop user that I can't imagine. Even taking RedEye out, I don't use iPhoto. I fire up Photoshop and use it there. I'm just used to using it, you know. You kind of get into those workflows and you know how something works, and that's kind of what you stick with. But we're running up on close to an hour and a half already, so we should probably wrap this up. This has been the 150th. Wow, can you believe that? 150 of these things.
Amazing.
150. Congratulations. Well, especially when you figure that when I started this podcast, I really started hoping that one of the staff members would simply take it over. They'd get excited about hearing something, and they'd go, I'll do it. So they'll take it over, and I didn't have to do it. But here I am. I'm still doing it. Chad Perry was actually going to be able to make it tonight, but a meeting came up at the last minute, and he couldn't do it. And next week, I know we'll have Guy Searle back. We'll go back to our regular scheduled recording. Next week's going to be kind of a cool show because, obviously, I'm going to have Leopard in my dirty little hands, and I have probably installed on every machine I have. So maybe I won't even be able to record the show next week. It'll break a bunch
of things. GarageBand should work.
The mix board won't work. Well, yeah, but I also have to worry about Audio Hijack Pro to record, you know, everybody else. And maybe the mix board won't interact well with it.
Tim Roberts. Oh, my God.
Yeah, talking through a headset, so it won't sound as good. That would be my luck. Recording this on my iPod. But maybe, I don't know if Chad and I are going to try to record a travel log going up to
cool.
The Apple Store.
Interview people in line.
I was thinking about that. You know, I have that iTalk that plugs right into the iPod, and I could use that to record. We've done it before, and it sounds okay for what it is.
Why don't you try it? You can always delete it if it doesn't work.
The problem is, what do I say to people standing in line or, you know, hi, I'm Tim Robertson with the MyMac Podcast. I'd like to ask you some questions. What do you think about the box you have in your hand? You know, it's not like the people that are buying it have actually used it.
You could say, what makes you stand in line for Leopard instead
right,
of waiting?
That's what I was going to say. Absolutely. Well, you know, why are you standing here? You know?
Yeah, why are they, what are they looking forward to the most?
And then it look like you have a reason to be there because you're interviewing people instead of just going to buy it right away to get a T-shirt.
Tax write-off.
Well, let me ask you why you're standing here.
That's right. Yeah. Rich, Donnie, I appreciate you guys coming
anytime.
On the show. And it was nice talking to you guys. I like to do these laid-back podcasts with some of the staff members that aren't normally on the show. I think it's fun to do, and it's it gives the listeners some different people to listen to occasionally and gets to meet the staff members of MyMac.com. We've got a large staff. We've got a lot more people that haven't been on the show yet. So I'm looking forward to getting some more of those people on. And we're going to go back to the contest here pretty soon. I've got more than a few emails saying, hey, are you guys going to hold any more contests? I think that's why a lot of people listen. They're just waiting to win something. And but, you know, I understand it's scary because you may get roped in and become a writer.
Highly possible.
There's precedence.
Beware of that.
Yeah. You never won anything, though, did you?
I didn't win anything, but I think the week before I emailed you to write, I entered the – you were giving away, I think, Adobe CS2.
See?
But I didn't win it. And I probably
– You didn't win
I guess I would have been disqualified if I did, if I became a writer a week later. I don't know.
You know, it's funny that –
why I waited 2 months.
One of the he wanted put a little separation there. Wow, that was November of last year that you won. Well, so then this has been almost a year
almost a year that I got involved with you.
How did you find the podcast originally?
How did I find the podcast? You know, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to think back. I think I saw the MyMac site referenced somewhere. And I had started listening to it months before, earlier last year. And I had started, just regularly taking a look at it and listening to the podcast. And then you put up a contest. And little did I know that you'd be the winner. So.
I just did.
Because you won me.
I just did a search in my mailbox because I keep all the entries of anybody that's ever entered a contest. I don't delete them. They're just sitting in my mailbox. Eventually, I'll go through them and weed them out. I just did a search for Donna Yan. I got tired of typing. And the first email I got from you, Donnie, was August 19th.
1942.
At August 19th, 2005, at 6:09 a.m.
Jeez, that early.
And the subject line was Adobe CS2, which means it was a contest. And sure enough, all it is your name and your address. So you are entering a contest from the podcast.
And then I think I bought Roxio Toast through the fundraiser for
yep, you
what
bought,
was it for?
You did. Was it, you right? For Katrina. You bought that on September 1st, 2005. You bought a copy of Roxio 7.
I'm Roxio still using
Toast
it.
7. Yep. And but your first email to me outside of entering the contest was August 27th, 2005, and it was response to call for writers.
But I remember what it said too, sort of.
Yeah, just started listening to the podcast 2 weeks ago. Great source of information. yeah, right. On the last
I make
podcast,
it sound good.
You mentioned I want to suck up a little bit here. On the last podcast, you mentioned you were looking for writers to write Mac tutorials. I'd like to hear more. I am an art teacher and a Mac enthusiast. For the 11 Macs we have in our school, I am Mr. Fix-It. Unfortunately, the rest of the building's windows we're working on to fix that. Hope to hear from you soon, Donnie Yankelo.
That's when I thought I'd get a big paycheck, too.
Yeah, that's right. And my response was, hi, Donnie. I'm sorry your email was so poorly written, I just can't use you.
And I sent $5,000 more and you gave it.
Let's look for Rich before I hang up. First email I got from Rich was, that didn't work because there's a lot of Riches that's emailed us.
So I can escape the embarrassment now.
I think our first conversation was through Gmail, though.
No, it was on the phone. Oh, maybe it was through Gmail. It was on the phone first, and then I think it might have been your Gmail account. May have been.
Oh, you know what I did? I looked for Rick instead of Rich. That might have something to do with a crappy response.
Just beware of all you contest entries out there. You know, you win a contest, and next thing you know, you're writing for MyMac.com.
Didn't David Cohn win a contest, or did he call in with a question?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. Okay, here's the first one from Rich Lefko. It was October 19th, 2005, and it was to contest at mymac.com. And you were trying to, the first contest you entered was for ProSoft, when we were giving away something for ProSoft.
Really? Did I?
Yep. And
I'm a big advocate of free. I like free stuff.
Free sounds good. And it doesn't look like you entered any contests after that for a long time, until June 9th, when you entered the contest for the Microsoft. And you actually put a little bit of an actual email, because most people, when they enter the contest, they just do exactly what we say, you know, put your name, address, and phone number. But yours says, looks like a nice prize. I enjoy the podcast very much, especially the news section. And that was on June 9th, so.
Jeez, then there's no news on this one, so.
As yeah, a side note, the Maxpiration blog is up now, so people can go buy their book.
Yep. Cool. It's definitely worth buying, and it's an enjoyable book. You did a really good job on all those articles, Donnie, and I'm glad that it's preserved. People will be able to read it for a good long time. And seriously, though, I'm not saying this because it's my Mac-produced stuff, but any Mac user would find great benefit of this book.
You know what's really cool, real good. Quick, is that even though it's most like iPhoto is an older iPhoto and some of the programs are older, but a lot of the tips still carry over to the newer versions.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, for Donnie and Rich, my name's Tim. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks a lot.
See ya.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.